Forget coffee. We're not even going to go there. That's not happening. And I don't mind people shaking, but, you know, a little bit. But we're going to have riots if we get rid of the coffee. The donuts is bad enough. But 1 Samuel 17. Talk about our vision this year. 1 Samuel 17. We get this verse from 1 Samuel 17. And this theme, there's many verses on this, those words, the cause of Christ. We will get to those verses in other sermons, but today we're focusing on it in 1 Samuel 17. Verse 24, it says this, "And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, Goliath, fled from him and were sore afraid. And the men of Israel said, have ye seen this man that has come up?" 1 Samuel 17 and verse 25. "Surely to defy Israel is he come up, and it shall be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches, and will give him his daughter, and make his father's house free in Israel. And David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, what shall be done to the man which killed the Philistine, and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine, that he should defy the armies of the living God? So the people answered him after this manner, and saying, so shall it be done unto the man that killeth him. And Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, why camest thou down hither? And with whom hast thou left alone those few sheep with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thine heart, for thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle. And David said, what have I now done? Is there not a cause? Let's go ahead and pray, and we'll talk about it. Is there not a cause? Father, thank you for the word. The chance to preach your word, I pray today that we would have your spirit speak to us, Father. I pray that mighty things would happen, Lord, and I pray that you would speak to us in a mighty way, Father. We pray that we would catch the cause, catch the vision, understand there's great things to do. Please speak to us now, Lord, and I pray that thy spirit would be in control and that what we believe you have for us to do this year and what we believe you're speaking to us about, Lord, I pray that that would be stirred in my heart and then stirred in all of our hearts, Father. Please help us and please refresh us and strengthen us. In Jesus' name, amen. David is told by his dad. David is young. He has three older brothers who are basically drafted in the military. His three brothers are at the battle. David is young, and his dad says, hey, son, go take some bread and cheese to your brother's captain, and then find out how the battle's going to come back and tell me. David does that, and he gets there, and for 40 days, Goliath is out there mocking God's people and defying God and saying, why don't somebody come fight with me? The armies are facing each other. There's a valley in between, and Goliath would walk out, and he'd say, listen, we don't need to fight the whole armies. You give your champion, and I'll fight with you, and I defy you. I defy your armies. Give me somebody, and whoever wins, the other country will serve them, and it'll be their servants. And, well, Goliath was a son of Anak. These are very strange people. We believe they're descendants from way back when and some strange mixtures we'll get to in one of these messages of the sons of God. It's a very interesting subject. But they had six fingers on their hands and six toes in their feet, and they were huge. Goliath was so big, if he was standing up here, his head would, he would be ducking his head. His head would, he's 9 feet, 9 inches tall. I mean, that guy could dunk like this, and he was a big guy, huge. He was so strong that the end of his spear weighs 75 pounds. Try holding a stick with 75 pounds on the end, and then try to use that as a weapon. He was so big and strong, and everybody's afraid. Day after day, he mocked God, he mocked Israel, and nobody did anything. And there was a great offer of your family be free and no longer could the government run your family or draft your kids or your everything is free in your family. Your land is free. Everything is free. If you did this, you'd marry the king's son. You get great riches and all these things. And David said, what's going to happen to the person who kills him? And everybody says, well, you get this and this and this. And he says, why isn't somebody going and killing that guy? And everybody said, David, look at him. What this dumb question. And David says, no, somebody needs to go kill him. And David's oldest brother, Eliab, hears David. David, most people in the Bible, he's called a youth, and youth is probably between the age of 12 and 15. It'd be no older than 15. And he was a young teenager, probably, most people guess he's 14. And so David is this young kid. He's not a warrior. He doesn't have weapons. He doesn't have shield and spear and sword and all those things. He's there to deliver bread and cheese. So his brother says, David, what are you doing here? Where are the sheep? Your sheep, you probably left them in the middle of the wilderness to die. You came here to watch the battle. You're irresponsible. You're being naughty. You're being bad, he says. How dare you? And he's very mad and really attacks David. And David asks the question. He says, because his brother's like, quit asking about the battle. Quit asking about killing Goliath. You're just a kid. And he says, what have I now done? Is there not a cause, a reason? Is there not something that should stir us up here? Isn't there something that should make us care about the situation? A few things about David I want to say. First of all, David was faithful. David was accused of having led the sheep. What is this? I want to remember this forever. Those who don't do anything always criticize the way the ones who are doing something do it. Always true. When I get attacked someday, it won't be by a soul winner. So I want you to know that. It will not be. You're always attacked by people who aren't doing something. And by the way, it's always easy to say, you should have done it this way, you should have done it this way, you should have done it this way. Well, go do it. Quit talking about it. You know, I'll admit to you, you can probably do a lot of things that I do better than I can do it. Show me how. You're not going to hurt me. I'm trying to figure all kinds of things out. I do 10,000 things wrong. So somebody made a statement a long time ago to help me so much. Somebody said this. They said, criticize by doing something better. I love that. That has guided me for so long. And listen, and his brother's standing there going, knock it off, David. And he starts attacking David. Why camest thou down hither, verse 28? With whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your pride and not in this your heart. Everything he said was wrong, literally. It says exactly where the sheep was. Verse 20, the sheep were. Verse 20 says, David rose up early in the morning after his dad told him to go and left the sheep with a keeper. David was faithful. David was exactly where he's supposed to be. David was not somebody that was irresponsible to leave the sheep. But people think if you're throwing up mud at somebody, then maybe someone will stick. David was not naughty. He was not there for pride. He did not leave the sheep in the wilderness. Everything his brother said was wrong. You know why? Because David has said somebody needs to go kill Goliath, and his brother wasn't. and he didn't do that. He had protected the sheep before. You talk about him being faithful with the sheep. Look at verse 34. David said unto Saul, thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went after him and smote him and delivered it out of his mouth. Who would expect a lad to go out and fight against a lion and a bear? Jeremiah, you there? Stand up, Jeremiah. Yeah, you. 13? 12. Can you imagine if a lion and a bear came to attack your sheep? Would you expect, and he was watching the sheep, would you expect your son to run away and come tell you? Not fight the lion and the bear? Can you imagine? Have a seat. Can you imagine that? Fighting a bear. I'll fight a bear with a gun. You know, and a scope, okay? I'll fight a bear. I'll fight a lion with one too. Matter of fact, it'd be kind of fun. But you know, David grabbed it by the beard. This is close quarters fighting. You got a little short sword, okay? He was faithful in what he did. David is faithful. Number two, those who are faithful in God's plan are prepared for the next thing that comes. David stands up and he says, all right, this is the great thing. He's a teenager. He says, let nobody's heart fail you for fear. Actually, he says, let none of your heart fail you for fear, because he's that age. I will kill Goliath. And they said, you are a kid. Look, You're this tall. Look at that big guy. He's huge. Look at Saul. Saul is a head taller than everybody else. Everybody else, a 6 foot tall guy, went up to Saul's shoulder. Saul was a king. He should have been out there fighting. Saul was a good 6 foot six, 6 foot eight. Maybe more. And they looked, they said, David, you're not armored. You're a kid. He says, you're just a child. He says, listen, when I was watching the sheep, there came a lion and a bear. They attacked the sheep. And I went out and fought with them, and I killed the lion, I killed the bear, and the same God who delivered the lion and the bear to my hand will help me kill Goliath. Why was David the one who knew he could kill Goliath? Because he was faithful in small things, and that prepared him for greater things. You follow? If he wouldn't have taken care of the lion and the bear, if he wouldn't have been faithful with the sheep, he would not be able to kill Goliath. But he knew God could do that because he tried God in the small things and he obeyed God in the things that seemed like they were small. Everybody thinks when they get something big, they'll do great things and be faithful and do them well for God. No, you don't get the big things because you were not faithful in the little things. The little things God puts in your life prepare you for the big things you'll face later. But many people get in this terrible cycle of not doing well in the small things or the things that they're dealing with now. And so they're not ready to deal with the things later. It is a terrible cycle. You get some trials, and you are 23, 25, and you get some trials in your life, and God's testing you to see if your heart's right toward him. And in those trials, you get mad, and you just go away from God, and you wander away, and God was going to teach you how to overcome trials and teach you patience and give you grace and show you he could help you through all your trials, but you quit in that trial. All of a sudden, you're a little later in life and a trial comes and you get hit with a trial and it is way over your head. Why? Because God is preparing you for this trial. You can handle it by that trial, but you quit in that trial. And then you get in this next cycle where you get problems that you have no idea how to deal with, so you don't deal with them well. You freeze, you quit, you get discouraged, you get angry, you fail, you don't try hard enough, you do whatever your failure is because you are not faithful in your God's training for you, and he prepares you for what's coming next. I have been up at the peak of what I can handle many times, but I always find when I get the next peak, I learned in the last trial what makes it so that even though this trial is bigger, it's still only here on me. And God never gives you a temptation that you cannot handle. But God prepares you. And if you will not stay faithful, and you say, what's the big deal about going to church? What's the big deal about reading the Bible every day? What's the big deal about, you know, I'm discouraged, I feel down, I don't need to keep on doing this? No, you need to be faithful in the little things. It'll make you great for the big things. Nobody gets down and bench presses 500 pounds the first try. Can you imagine that? 9-year-old kid, I'm going to be a bodybuilder someday. All right. You get stronger by being faithful in every little thing. If you're not faithful in that which is least, you'll not be made faithful in much. And you get in a cycle of being prepared for the next battle and be able to handle it every time, or you get in a cycle of not being prepared for the next battle because you fail it. God is a God of grace. If you'll take your trials right now and say, Lord, in this trial, I'm going to give thanks. I'm going to praise you. I'm going to stay faithful to church. I'm going to keep reading the Bible. I'm not going to get bitter at you. And I'm going to just pray my way through this and make it. God will give you grace and he'll just start you from here. And I guarantee you, your next trial, you'll say, I can handle that. Because you didn't buckle. And you're waiting and you know God's got something big for you and he has a big plan for you and you have something important to do, but you just... But you think when you get there, you'll be ready for it. Not if you will not be faithful in the little things. You do not kill Goliath, you don't kill the lion and the bear. It's good stuff, preacher. Man, it's good. I'm glad I came to church today. You're ready. Number three, David understood the bigness of the Lord's cause. 1 Samuel 17. David understood the bigness of the Lord's cause. And Verse 26, David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, what shall be done to this man which killed the Philistine, who taketh away the reproach of Israel? And who is he that he should defy the armies of God? His brother gets mad at him. David said, what have I now done? Is there not a cause? And he turned from his brother, who's criticizing him, toward another, and spake after the same manner, and said, why is anybody killing him and taking away God's reproach? And the people answered him again after the former manner. Look at him. He's huge. When the words were heard which David spake, they rehearsed them before the king, and Saul sent for them. And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail thee, because thy servant will go and fight against the Philistine. Saul said to David, thou art not able to yet go against this Philistine to fight with him. Thou art but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth. Verse 37, David said, moreover, the Lord that delivered thee out of me out of the hand of the lion and the bear will deliver me out of the hand of the Philistine. And Saul said to David, no, we cannot do this. I'm not going to send a kid. I will go. No, he said, all right, go. He is understanding the cause. What is this? People who believe in a cause will give all to it. David's cause was that God and his country and his people would not be put to shame. God has been mocked for 40 days. It's an important number in the Bible, by the way, if you look at number 40. And he goes and he's been mocked for 40 days. And he says, this is going to end. Somebody's going to go fight him. God will give the victory. This is not right that he should reproach God. That was the cause. People will do amazing things for a cause. There's a football player for the Bears named Chris Conte. This is Chris Conte's quote. And again, I'm saying, when you get a cause and you get something intense about something, you'll do anything for it. Chris Conte said this, I would rather have the experience of playing in the NFL and die 10 to 15 years earlier than not play and have a long life. That's what he said. Why? His cause is football. 10 to 15 years. He'd rather die at 55 than 70, but be able to play in the NFL. I'm not saying whether that's smart or stupid. I'm saying when you get a cause, you are consumed with it, and you make whatever happen to have that happen. It's your passion. Doesn't matter if it's a good cause or a bad cause. When you get a cause, people have been getting young people into a cause. They change nations. They bring rebellions. They bring riots. They do all kinds of things by getting people excited about a cause. They'll give their money, their time, and their even life. In Cal Berkeley, they were going to build a new stadium at the University of California, Berkeley, which is kind of a crazy place anyway. There was 42 big trees there. And 42 protesters decided to go live in those trees so they wouldn't cut them down. That was their cause. And they stayed there for a day, bringing buckets up of food and buckets of bad stuff down. And they stayed there for 2 days and 3 days and 5 days and 7 days and 2 weeks and 3 weeks and 4 weeks and 6 weeks and 8 weeks and 2 months and 3 months and 4 months and 5 months and 6 months and 7 months and 8 months and 9 months and 10 months and 11 months they lived in the tree. And a year. And 13 months and 14 months and 15 months and 16 months and 17 months and 18 months and 19 months and 20 months. And in 21 months, they lost their appeals and they removed them forcibly from the trees. They lived in a tree for 21 months to save the tree. When people get a cause, they give themselves to it. They will do amazing things. And David said, I'll go down in the valley. I'm a kid. It doesn't matter. This is more important. The signers of our Declaration of Independence had a cause. And they said this at the end of the Declaration before they signed their name. John Hancock being very bold about it, say, hey, I'm doing this. Go ahead and do it. And for the support of this Declaration and a firm reliance on the providence of divine, on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Why? The cause of America. When you understand a cause, when you get consumed with the cause, you will do amazing things. You will give yourself to that cause. The problem is many times people do not have a noble cause. David said, hey, what have I done? I've done anything wrong. Isn't there a cause to be stirred up? He is mocking God. Somebody's got to do something about that. So what happens? Well, David goes into the valley. You get that picture back up there, Ken, when you get a chance? Something's already off. It'll take a minute. It's fine. Let me show you some people with causes in the New Testament. How about Jesus? John chapter 12. John chapter 12, in verse 27, Jesus says this: "Now my soul is troubled. But what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. But for this cause came I into this hour." Jesus says, "Hey, I know I'm going to be crucified, but this is the cause that I came for." Jesus understood his cause in life. John chapter 18. John chapter 18, verse 37. Pilate therefore said unto him, "Art thou a king then?" And he said, "Thou sayest that I am a king. To this end was I born, and for this cause came I into the world, that I should bear witness in the truth. Everyone that is of the truth heareth my voice." Jesus said, "I will die for the cause. I came for this cause, to speak the truth and to die for mankind." He said, "For the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which is lost." Jesus understood the cause. David understood the cause. Paul understood the cause. I'm going to read you a few verses where Paul says and talks about the cause. Paul, who said, "I would gladly spend myself and be spent." Romans chapter 15. Paul says this in verse 9. He says, "That the Gentiles might glorify God for his mercy. And it, as is written, for this cause I will confess to thee among the Gentiles and sing unto thy name. For this cause I'm taking the gospel." And then Ephesians, and there's many verses Paul says it. We'll get to them in other sermons. But Ephesians chapter 3, for a cause. And verse 14, "For this cause I bow my knees unto the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ." And then Colossians chapter 1 and verse 9. "For this cause also, since the day we heard of it, do not cease to pray for you, and to desire that you may be filled with all the knowledge of the will of God and all wisdom and spiritual understanding." Paul was a man who said, "I'm doing this for this cause, for this purpose. Here is the reason. A cause is a strong guiding reason for something that we have." But the problem is, Goliath's here, David's here, most people are there. They don't have the cause. See, they're not cause-driven, and if they do have a cause, it's earthly-minded causes. My career, my fun, my entertainment, my toys, and that's what they live for. The cause of Christ supersedes our lives. The martyrs were burned at stakes and fed to lions for the cause. You got to understand, what is the cause of Christ? The cause of Christ is so vital. You must understand, God cares about things. We need to be like David. The cause of Christ is the glory of God and bringing glory to him and not let his name be shamed. The cause of Christ is winning souls to Christ. The cause of Christ is helping needy people. The cause of Christ is shining the light in the world. The cause of Christ. This year we ask the question, is there not a cause? And I ask you directly a question, what is your cause? David ran down in the valley, and many of you know the story, but he ran down there. They tried to put armor on him. They tried to put give him a sword and a shield. And he says, "I've not proved these things. I got my sling." He takes his sling down in the valley. He grabs 5 smooth stones. By the way, we think the reason is later we find out Goliath had 4 brothers. But he goes down in there, and that's actually true. Later we find out he had 4 brothers. He grabs 5 stones. He takes one of them on there, and Goliath says, "What a joke. Why are you guys sending a kid against me?" And David stands up to him and says, "I'm going to kill you today." And Goliath gets mad and says, "All right, let's do it." And David runs toward him, and he swings that sling, and he flings it with the hand of God reaching into his hand, and the stone flies. And it's interesting, if you look at the phrase in the Bible, it says very specifically, it sinks into his head. Do you know how fast a rock has to go to sink into a skull? Like, I can knock somebody out by throwing a rock. But to sink into their skull, it sinks into a skull, like a bullet. Somebody probably looked and said, "I think David forgot a rock. I didn't see anything." It sinks into his skull. Goliath falls down. Figure, 9'9". Think how big his head is. David goes down there. Goliath's down there on the ground. He falls on his face for whatever reason. David runs down there. David doesn't have a sword to cut off his head. And everybody's looking. I don't believe it. And David pulls out Goliath's sword and goes, cuts off his head, grabs his head, lifts it up. And everybody says, Goliath's dead. And guess what? Everybody up here gets courage. And everybody on Goliath's side takes off running. And then all of a sudden the rout starts. David kills Goliath because he had a cause. The cause pushes you to really live for something, to step out, to go into the valley. It's very comfortable up on the hill with no cause. But you don't accomplish anything. We know two people's name on the hill, Eliab and Saul, and neither one is very glorious. You know, if you're disappointed with what you've done in your life, what you've accomplished, I would ask you, what cause are you living for? What's your cause? Give me a sentence. No, you don't have to do that right now. What cause are you living for? David said, is there not a reason? Is there not a cause? Is there not something that needs to be done here? Why doesn't anybody care? I want to say it isn't the most likely that the Lord uses, but those who live for his cause. Talk about least likely. Look at verse 1 Samuel 17 and verse 32 and 33. And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go to fight against the Philistines. Saul said to David, thou art not able to go against the Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth. Was David the most likely? No, the least likely person there. Was he even there to fight? No, he's there to deliver bread and cheese. I want to say, in your faithful service to God, you usually find your greatest works. Don't go looking to do great things. Don't go looking to do great things. Go looking to take care of whatever responsibilities God has given you and do a good job on those. Great things come in the process of doing a good job with what God has given you in life. He wasn't the most likely. Look what Goliath says to him. Verse 42, when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him. For he was but a youth and ruddy. Means he was basically attractive and of a fair countenance. And the Philistine said unto David, am I a dog? In other words, David was kind of a pretty boy. He wasn't even scary looking. At least he could have been a 13-year-old who's like this. He was a nice-looking boy. You look like such a nice boy. No, I'm trying to look tough. Stop it. And he said it was a joke. And the Philistine said unto David, am I a dog? And thou comest me with staves? David had a staff with him. He says, this kid needs a sword. And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said unto David, come unto me, and I will give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air and the beasts of the field. But David understood the cause. Thou comest to me with a sword, David said, and with a spear and a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day the Lord's going to eat you. And you're going to know, and the world's going to know, that the earth, that there is a God in Israel. The Lord doesn't save a sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's. Listen, David went out there and David got the battle, got the victory, killed Goliath, but he was not the most likely. I want to say, God does not usually use the most likely. He uses the prepared and willing. Those who have, I believe that anybody up there on the hill who would have understood the cause and said, God, give me the strength. We need to kill Goliath. This is not right. God would have helped them get the victory. But one person understood the cause was greater than the risk he was going to take. What's your cause? What's your purpose? What is your cause in life? I understand you got to work a job. I understand you got to, take care of your house and I understand all that. That's part of the cause. But all of that is for the Lord. You raise your family for the Lord. You go to work for the Lord. You go to church. You put God first. You seek God's kingdom first. And you live for the cause of Christ. How about lifting up your eyes? And instead of looking at the bigness of the giant, look at the greatness of the cause. Instead of looking at how big you are and how weak you are, look at how big God is. And imagine what God could do. Instead of looking at your little life and just saying, what am I doing? And just looking, lift up your eyes, Jesus said, and see the fields right in the harvest. We want this year to have our lives. It's going to be a great year. It's going to be an exciting year. But we need to lift up our eyes and be cause driven and understand causes and get the cause of Christ and our beat, our heart beat with the heart of God and think like He does and have His causes in us. Is there not a cause to live for something more than a career and money and video games and television and playing around? Is there not a cause? Look around, folks. Look at the world out there. Look at the name of God and how it's treated. Look at the wickedness in the world. Look at the needy people around the world who need Christ. Look at the broken lives and broken families and broken hearts and say, there is a cause that's got to drive me to be a better Christian. To be a good Christian, to really get God's presence, to go fight for the Lord and go out there and get victory. Is there not a cause? Our purpose in 2015, to love and live for the cause of Christ. To love and live for the cause of Christ. I know you have other things going on in life. I understand, so do I. But love and live the cause of Christ. Think, what does the Lord care about? What do I need to accomplish for eternity for the cause of Christ? That is our theme. This year, we're going to ask you, understand the cause. If you understand the cause, you'll pray for it. You'll give to it. You'll be involved in it. You will care if you get the cause. Or you'll get consumed with your own life and your own little things. And somebody once said, if you're all wrapped up in yourself, you become a very small package. The cause of Christ. Is there not a cause today? Looks like there is one to me. Let's this year say with David, I'll go in the valley. There's a cause. I know it's not the easy thing. It's not the comfortable spot. It's not where I want to be, but you know what? God will give me the strength to live for a cause. There's a lot of causes out there. Let's bow for prayer. Father, thank you for your word, Lord. We just touched on a couple of crazy causes somebody lived for. Some causes that were noble, that weren't nearly as noble as the cause of Christ. I pray this year, we would understand the cause of Christ. I pray this year you stirred some hearts today that we would get some Davids instead of some Eliabs. Some people who get the cause and want to live for something higher and more noble. Lord, thank you for the cause of Christ. It's so important. Lord, I've lived for that cause and I know what the joy it is just being consumed with it. And I pray that I would keep that passion and I would pray that you'd stir all of us for the cause of Christ, for what you care about, and for you and your glory, and for the people you love. Please, Lord, give us that heart. Thank you. We have so many with it already. I pray that today would increase, and we would capture the cause in Jesus' name. Heads bowed, eyes closed. I'm going to ask everyone to stand, heads bowed, eyes closed. Pianist is coming.